And talking a little bit about inflation and effective field theory. For me, actually, inflation, I mean, it's an interesting idea because not only solves this problem for classical, a standard cosmology, monopole problem, horizon problem, flatness problem, but also it can predict something about temperature perturbation and seeds for larger scale structure. So, but the point is that for inflation in theoretical side is that we don't know how we can, I mean, we have a lot of models and we can get the same results. So it's good to know that how we can distinguish different models and if they are correct, compatible with the observation or not. So an approach to that is doing effective field theory. I say a few words about effective field theory, but let me mention some papers here. There are a lot of other papers on effective field theory inflation. I mentioned these papers because this one is single field by Cheung, Carminelli, Senatore, and others. Then there is a multi-field version of this paper by Senatore and Zaldariaga. But there is another version of single effective field theory for single field by Weinberg. This work is a multi-field version of this method, and I will compare the result with this model here at the end. Okay. Let me say some few words, okay, for effective theory. Very rough effective field theory, effective theories are true for a certain domain of energy, for example, SKs. Okay? We have two kinds of effective theory, in my opinion, actually. One is that you know the full theory, but you are not interested in whole energy regime. So you just focus on a certain regime. So then effective field theory helps you to simplify the calculations. An example is in electromagnetic course, if you have an antenna, for a special case of antenna, you can solve Maxwell equations, and then you get terms like this, for example. They have some coefficients here, okay? And it's exact for electric field, for example, okay? You can solve for a special antenna, but it's an exact result, but no, I think it's because of the structure of antenna can get different resonance appears. Okay. But the point here is that if you want to ask your audience in a car or in their homes, when you say to them that tune their radio, you just give them this frequency. Okay. The point is that because when R becomes larger and larger, they are not effective. So effectively, you consider just this term, okay? It happens, I think it came to my mind in this morning that in GR, for example, we know full equation of motions, highly nonlinear, but I mean, we say very far from the source, gravity is weak, so we can go to weak energy limits and do, it's kind of effective field theory for GR, for example. Okay, but the other case, which is I think is more interesting, is that we know that a theory works for a certain regime of energy scales, but we don't know beyond that regime. Okay, so what we can do if we don't have the full theory, we can just guess maybe or suggest some terms and then say, okay, it should be effective theory for our model, and we check that if these new terms that we add by hand, if they are compatible with observation or not. But usually, I mean, we are not allowed to, we can't put all, every term we like by hand because they are infinite, maybe. So we restrict ourselves by a symmetry, for example, that we think that it should be there, okay? For example, we assume that general covariance should be a symmetry of model. So we just add the terms that they obey general covariance. Okay, after this very brief introduction, let me show you. It's maybe the end result. It's the most general form of the Lagrangian for a scalar, not one, for multi-scalar fields and gravity, up to four derivative term. Okay? So,
why do you have three derivatives?
Okay, exactly, it's a good point. Now, it should be this one, actually. So they are all the terms that have four derivatives. Oh, why you don't have the three derivatives? The three derivatives because... Three derivatives is, okay. What's the point about Galilean? Because three derivatives, then the contraction is not possible, I think, is a metric.
Okay. Box by
D squared. Okay, we can look here if we can find it.
There is box by D phi squared.
Box by D phi squared.
It should. Box by D phi. Yeah. How do you simplify that? That's the Galilean. You're not supposed to be able to.
Okay. Okay. I say, because I do effective field theory. Okay. Some of these terms are just the other terms up to a total derivative. But I do some more simplification by considering that, because it's effective field theory, so the higher order terms are subdominant. So I solve the equation of motion for dominant terms and then plug it back to the Lagrangian. Then you can solve them. You can simplify them. Okay? So I will work with this Lagrangian. And
three derivatives can be contracted with epsilon.
Yes, but okay. I didn't consider epsilon. I just have metric.
You're right. Well, you're right. Epsilon is formed. But I guess there's a cosmological direction of
why is the delta ij? Why is that just like a trivial metric?
Yes. I assume this one. Yes, it's an assumption. Okay. I just assume that my model here there is no combination of the phis. To be honest, I didn't check that. Maybe by field redefinition you can do that, but I'm not sure. Actually, so it's an assumption here.
Yes.
Yes.
The only one that doesn't have nasty ghost poles, negative energies, and heaven knows what. It's the second order. The others have severe stability problems. Tension.
Yes,
mate.
Ghost poles, ghosts cover the whole energy scheme.
But to get negotiated between the quadratic, there's no ghost poles there, everything's
curvature squared, the fourth order equation.
I suppose we're expanding on the whole height solution, right? The general wouldn't be other than a solution, but it could be what things were expanding on the whole height solution. And in this case, the correction is the leading
RIJ? What do you mean by RIJ?
Something like that contracted with five.
Yes, it was there.
It was there, right?
Yes. You have these cells.
Oh, okay, and then you can make it to that.
What are the index of INJ?
They show that I have many fields. They are indexed for phi, 1 to n, in principle.
This is not a vector field.
No. They count number of... Yes, exactly.
Component scale field.
Yes. Okay. Now, let me show you some of its properties in single field model, which is Weinberg's model, actually. So if you start with this model, okay, let me say something. Yeah. I don't consider these two terms. I assume A1 and A2 are zero. Because the point is that these terms just appear like single field model. And then Weinberg showed that they are important in tensor fluctuation. I think they distinguish left and right-handed modes. Okay, but the physics is same even in multi-field case because they don't couple to phis. Okay, so Weinberg studied this tensor perturbation because of these two terms, but I don't. I just assume that because it's same as a single field model, so I just assume that those coefficients are zero. But single field model, if you do perturbation. Change this phi to phi bar plus delta phi, you get these terms, okay? This one is the Lagrangian for background, okay? The properties. One, when you start with this term, just one term, you get up to fourth order of up to fourth order of perturbation. Automatically. I say this because it's not the case in Senator and Zaldariaga's approach. There you should put the terms by hand, all the terms. So, the coefficient of these terms are different in their model. But, yes. It's fourth order in gradient in the derivative terms. But automatically, if you consider this, you get, because it's also fourth order in the phi, so you can get fourth order in perturbation.
What's the mass scale that you expect
it should be, the point is that it should be, the scale of inflation at horizon, I don't know what is it, 10 to 16 GeV, okay? The point is that it should be a little bit, because you can consider, it's the physics intuition by Weinberg, that you can consider a little bit before the modes, before coming out from horizon, you can consider those modes, and they have more energy. So it should be close to energy scale of inflation, a little bit more. But not, you shouldn't reach to Planck scale relatively. Okay? The other... By F over M. But F should be around 1, because now I use this, the phi, they are dimensionless. Okay, so the F is dimensionless, so everything is governed by M, yes. The second one is, you can see it's delta phi dot square. So the coefficient of delta phi square, delta phi dot and the spatial derivative of delta phi now is not 1. Because of this term, okay? Then maybe, so a speed of sound is not 1, but maybe you we expect that, okay, maybe we can get large non-Gaussianity, because it usually happens when you have single field model. But the point is that I should maybe, right, if effective field theory be correct, then I have terms like from there, I have these terms, no? And I add these terms, F. So I need this term be less than this term, always. So okay. So effective field theory, if it's correct, impose this condition for me. So this means that this term, I mean, the difference from 1 is not too much because it comes from this f phi dot square over m square. So it cannot be very large. So it's the point about a single field model of Weinberg that you don't expect large non-Gaussianity.
Yeah.
And then how? It's
the same F5.
Yes, right. You have higher order also. So you have higher order Lagrangian.
Yes, but. Yes, but I'm not sure that if you consider this term in addition to these terms, then how you define the speed of sound.
Yeah, that's my question.
Well, I think in the definition of a speed of sound, you ignore all the higher order.
That's no higher order. This is all second order. You have third order.
F or third.
Well, you have higher order. It's delta phi.
There's never more than one derivative on a field. So if you expand around the background, there's the leading parts always just.
I mean, we define the speed of sound because you start from the second order. I mean,
well, you
start from the canonical Lagrangian and then get the calculator.
Yes,
get this. I mean, the concept of the speed of sound, with that wave or propagation.
But you have to talk about the speed of sound with respect to some background. You could stand around a background and you look at the quadratic part around that background, and that's always standard second order.
You ignore the higher orders?
Well, you're expanding around the back. Yeah, you ignore it. It's a speed of sound is a statement about linear waves. Or
CNB in our universe, where if I tell you the speed of sound is 1/√3 times the speed of light, approximately. So therefore, if you make the speed of sound significantly different, the speed of light, got superluminary activity.
Okay. So what is the quest for the problem?
Well, if you the speed of sound in the FRW for every unit is approximately 1/√3 times C.
That's right.
So if the speed of sound is huge, whatever, it's not one, then you have to worry about superluminary activity.
It's less than one.
Which I'm not opposed to. If it's less than one, then fine.
Okay, so I think it's less than one, yes. Well, at least in, it's less than one in what you expressed. Here, I guess it could be bigger.
Yes, but I have a deal. I think it's. Yes, I can say
it should
that.
Be less than one.
Yes, I think it is. Because it. Yes, it is. Because
depends on the sign of S.
Yes, it depends. If the sign of S is positive, then it's less than one.
Sorry, just one short question. So you are saying that the higher order derivative is negligible compared to quadratic term, is it true?
That's an assumption. If the
I mean in your calculation.
Yes.
So you just keep the second order quadratic term and then get the perturbations. That's
what do you mean by second order now?
I mean you have delta phi power 4.
No, I asked. I asked I just assume this one.
Yeah, I mean that your higher order.
Here, you mean?
No, the perturbation term.
Okay.
You have grabbed the delta phi power 4. So you would ignore the higher orders in your calculation?
No. No.
So they are. Why?
Why I don't ignore?
Yeah.
Because I need them if I want to consider at the end just have estimation for FNL, non Gaussianity. I need these coefficients in principle.
So you are saying that this is in the same order of the quadratic term?
No, the quadratic terms coming from m squared is the dominant term. There is a correction for quadratic terms, but I mean it's less than this m squared because this term is much less than m squared.
So for power spectrum, it's enough to keep the quadratic, but if you want to go back with non-Gaussianity, you need to.
Okay, so the point here in single field model is that maybe you can't get large non-Gaussianity. Okay, let's go to multi-field case. So it's the most general Lagrangian, and then you can do it for background terms exactly same as here. You can do it for all these scalar fields. And then you can get background and second order, cubic order, and quadratic order in perturbations. Okay? But it seems, I mean, for me, maybe it was hard, but it seems it's not very useful to do calculations here. I just constrained to the case that I have just two fields. Okay? I think it's much simpler, but it's not trivial. So I consider this case. And then these terms, okay, produce six additional terms. You can see their coupling is different, the contraction between d phi and d chi. Okay? So you have these six additional terms. Okay? Now, this, for example, the second order perturbation is something like this. You can see there is a coefficient because of background, and then we can do it for cubic and quartic order. But now I want to check that compare this perturbation model, perturbation theory with the curvature perturbation, adiabatic perturbation, and entropy perturbation. Okay, so I need to go from this perturbation to these perturbations. Just a very quick review. That if you have a background trajectory, the perturbation lying the trajectory parallel to the trajectory is adiabatic mode, and then the normal to it that is entropy mode. You can define it easily. There is one parameter here, is this theta here. So you can define this vector t tangent to background trajectory like this, cosine theta, sine theta, and then obviously n is orthogonal to that. And then by this definition of vector delta, delta phi, delta chi, we can get delta sigma and delta s, adiabatic mode and entropy mode. What I'm going to do is that I am going to just use these definitions and read delta phi, delta chi, respect to delta sigma and delta s, and plug them back into the Lagrangian.
There was some more recent paper, like a year ago, by Chris Gordon and someone else, where they updated this. This they do because they said actually, you know, this is kind of hard in the case when there's turns and there's basically when theta depends on time.
Yes.
And they did some update of this.
I saw the paper, but
showed that, like, there wasn't a big change, but there was something else that you had to do.
I don't know
like
about the details.
I can't remember where it was, but it's not maybe you would know.
I don't know. I saw that paper, but I don't know the exact conclusion there. I use this. It's the first paper, Gordon, Vans, Bassett, and Tsujikawa. Oh, sorry, not Tsujikawa, Roy Martens. Okay. I'm not sure if this recent paper changed the physics here. I should check. Okay. Let's do it. The quadratic order becomes like something like this. These in these brackets are just they depend on background, because remember that theta is a function of background. Okay, so they are just some coefficients from background. What is important for me is that this term appears here, this term here, and always you can get, if you go to cubic order, always you can get these terms. Okay, so always you have this combination. Okay, and now if you want to consider, it's the same for quartic order, and if you want to think about shape of non-Gaussianity, let's just take this one, for example. And then if you expand this, you can see what's happened. The point is here for me is that if you get equilateral non-Gaussianity because of this term in adiabatic mode, you have to get local non-Gaussianity in entropy mode. And because there is no, I mean, okay, it depends on theta dot, the amplitude. But if there isn't theta dot, because if theta dot is zero, you are just single field. Okay? So we should assume theta dot is not zero. Okay? But I don't say about amplitude of non-Gaussianity, but the shape of non-Gaussianity. If you get equilateral non-Gaussianity here in adiabatic mode, you have to get local non-Gaussianity for entropy mode.
Are you saying that the only contribution to delta's cube term comes from this term?
It's the only contribution, because you have these terms, delta S, okay, and you have this, the other one, which is delta S dot plus, I think, delta C. So if you have multiplication of these terms, mm-hmm. always, if you want delta S cube, there is not no term from here. So always you can get delta S cube from this term. So there is no other delta S cube. Okay. Okay. So it's my conclusion for the shape of non-Gaussianity. Now the amplitude.
So if I have delta S dot S squared, that doesn't give me local?
I don't know. If I have delta S, maybe somebody else can respond. If we have, because you can have delta S dot cube, delta S dot S squared, yes. So I don't know if it's local or not. I'm not sure, because then
I think I must be local.
Delta S changes. Yes, delta S that contribution is from horizons. Then they exit horizon, this delta S dot. Maybe they are. Okay. Now the amplitude. I wrote just the Lagrangian in abstract way. I just assume that during inflation, d over dt can be, I mean, I assume that it's h, okay? So the terms in the Lagrangian are h cube in the third for the Lagrangian actually. Or h cube theta dot, and okay? So if you define zeta dot, the curvature perturbation from this adiabatic perturbation, you get this result. Okay, now assume two different regimes. If theta dot is much, much smaller than h, here the dominant term is this h cube. Here the dominant term is h squared. So h squared times h, they cancel each other. So you get this one as rough estimation for f and l. Okay? But from here, we know that this term cannot be very large. So f and l is small. So if the term, the curvature of background trajectory is small, then you can't get larger than Gaussian T. And it's compatible with the single field, because if the turn is not very sharp, so it can be approximated by single field. So it's, the result is same as single field, exactly same as single field. Okay.
So what is GI?
Where is GI? Oh, okay. These GIs are, because here I have these functions, G. These G's, the coefficients. I said that there is a function of G. But in principle, all of them should satisfy this. Okay? But in the other regime that you have.
So this F is not. This is
no, no, no. This F is just a function of G. So for all of them, you should satisfy this one. Because you have six extra terms, additional terms, all of them should be less than. Then for this, the other case, the opposite case, here the dominant term is this theta dot cube, here theta dot square, then you have theta dot over h. Okay? So this one should be a small, but this can be large. So it is. It says that if you have a sharp term, you can get larger than Gaussian T. And it's compatible with the other results, actually. So in this sense, in the amplitude of non-Gaussianity, it doesn't say much more the standard predictions. If you are in a single field, you can't get large non-Gaussianity. If you have two fields with sharp turns, you can get large non-Gaussianity.
The collaboration 2013 excludes non-Gaussianity. So this must constrain, significant constraint.
Yes, exactly. The I didn't actually. Okay, I should say first. This paper is before Planck, so I didn't compare with the Planck. But I could do that after Planck, but I didn't.
Because Weinberg published his paper 6 years before Planck.
Yes.
Some people keep saying the universe is much simpler than we thought.
Yes.
I'm not sure I agree with that. But anyway.
But you're right, because there is a constraint from Planck. But there's a point here, and I don't know actually, because if you have a very sharp term, then maybe you can produce local non-Gaussian T. By local, I mean in time. Okay, so maybe they usually have some effects on power spectrum, some oscillation. They add some oscillation. I think all of, I mean, I'm not sure. Obviously, they have some constraint, but I think you can have these very sharp terms, and they are not ruled out yet. Okay, obviously, when we have an observation, it's just a constraint, so, I mean.
This is why we do experimental physics.
Yes.
So, we have, so I guess what's new about this, because, I mean, we already knew that when you have two-field inflation, if you have sharp turns, and you get large, but you get significant and faster. So, is there any new perspective?
Not really. In the amplitude of non-Gaussians, you know. Just that. Okay. Now, okay. It's just one. Okay, I told about that. But there's just one maybe suggestion that maybe one can say that this term can be large, and then, but the other terms, higher order terms, are small. So you can make this term large. But okay. Let me just compare the result here with Senator's approach. I should say something about Senator and Zalderig approach. What they do is that they assume the first paper by Chung, Kerminelli, Senator, and the others. They assume that they have this adiabatic mode. And then when they want to construct the multi-field case, they add this entropy mode on that background. By background, I mean on that basis. So when they have two fields, they already know that which one is adiabatic mode. Okay? But here, I didn't know when I started that which one is adiabatic mode. So I had to do that transformation. Okay? And then, okay? Okay, I think it's this. Okay, I can skip this one. What they do is that they just go to perturbation first, and then they do effective field theory. In principle, it's what they do. But in Weinberg's approach, here you do the effective field theory and then consider the perturbations. Okay, it may.
In the end, is it just a matter of rotation in the phase space of the fields that you can get from one to another?
Yes, exactly. It's the case.
No, but I think it, organizing the terms is also different because, I mean, Weinberg case, you're basically expanding around the Minkowski background.
Minkowski?
Well, it's a gradient expansion, right? Around. I say it's Minkowski, right? Because it's you're organizing terms as powers of gradients, powers of that. But then in Zambaraga, the power approach, it's you separate the special derivatives from time derivatives, and they could scale differently. So you're expanding around in part W, space time. So I mean, I think this is really different. One is the expansion around Minkowski, the other is expansion around part W.
Yes, because they assume this 3+1 breaking, and then they introduce that Wilson boson, I think, and then that one is adiabatic mode for them. In their approach, you can see that they have, I can show you actually, but they have a lot of free parameters. So they say they can get large non-Gaussianity in principle because of those terms. But here, because the term, the coefficients are coming from this condition, so from this term actually, so with this condition, so you can't get very large non-Gaussianity in principle.
You're saying that condition here is this condition is stronger than the condition they have. They have only the condition on the gradients, spatial differences. But here you have some on time dependence as well.
Okay, and then, okay, what? Okay. If you look at the paper by Senator Zagarica, I'll just forget these terms, these coefficients. They have some coefficients, but the field, let's say in their, in their paper, delta phi is adiabatic mode, okay? The fields appear just with derivatives. So they have this shift symmetry, and it's the starting point for them, in principle, okay? But here, I can't do that because I should work with this delta sigma and delta s. So the shift symmetry here transformed to this, okay? If you use this definition and then the theta, it's just a rotation here. Okay, so delta sigma and delta s are not invariant under that symmetry, but these combinations are invariant. And these combinations are those combinations that they appear everywhere. Okay, so I say here that if you don't know which one is adiabatic mode, if you just have two fields, then if you don't know which one is adiabatic, which one is entropic mode, then in principle, a combination of that, of those two modes should play as a building block of your perturbation theory, effective field theory for perturbation. Let me conclude, and then I will come back here. What I said is that, okay, you cannot, I mean, the model does not predict a large non-Gaussianity. If you have a high, very sharp term, you can get a large non-Gaussianity. It's a standard. It seems that different shapes of non-Gaussianity in adiabatic and in entropy mode are related or correlated. And then I say that if you want to do same as Senator and Zaldarjaga, if you don't assume that you know which one, which mode is adiabatic, which one is entropic mode, you should start with these combinations. And you should build your effective field theory at the level of perturbation with these building blocks. Then you can get local non-Gaussianity.
One more slide. Okay, so you're saying that the impulse shift symmetry, first of all, why do the impulse shift symmetry?
Why? Because they say that in inflation you should have a shift symmetry, yes.
But it shouldn't be. It's not exact shift symmetry.
No, it's not exact.
But is it important that there are deviations from shift symmetry or not?
I think they don't consider it. I mean, when they are in inflation regime, no, they don't consider it. They just assume the shift symmetry, exact shift symmetry. Maybe they...
I don't understand. It cannot be exact shift symmetry because, I mean, obviously, V prime and inflation power spectrum is proportional to one over V prime. So it's, yeah, exactly.
Doesn't it just boil down to the fact that if they want to, I mean, that like here you use this condition to simplify your life, they need the condition to get rid of the sum terms and make sure the other higher order.
Yeah, but my point is that you need deviations to end inflation.
Yeah, but if it's a small, it's higher. So.
Yeah, it's true that if you have quantum shifts and dual gradients, it's small, so it's just cancels.
Yes, but I mean, you need to keep those higher order terms.
Yeah, but if it's our order of epsilon, then I get epsilon squared.
That's right.
So you break them with a small.
But I mean, the power spectrum is proportional to the 1 over epsilon, so if an epsilon is 0, then it doesn't make sense. That's
the way they get it is that they really come with the power of the depth and then ratios come in the power of the epsilon.
I mean, the corrections do, but my point is epsilon exactly equals to zero doesn't make sense because the power spectrum becomes infinite.
Yes, but I think what they do is that they just shift symmetry, exact shift symmetry. Okay, in their notation, pi is adiabatic perturbation and sigma is our entropic modes. But you can see that everywhere they are just derivative.
They're applying shift symmetry to the perturbations.
Yeah.
And I thought that was inspired by the fact that the lowest order action for the perturbations exhibits this shift symmetry. That doesn't necessarily mean that the higher order background evolution has a shift symmetry. So I think you can have, because you're talking about, you can't have a shift symmetry for the background, precisely.
Yeah.
But the background equations always solve at a higher order. And so could you have, is it okay then to just put a shift symmetry on the perturbations, which is what they're doing? And then they instruct all their higher order perturbation operators to exhibit the shift symmetry. Whereas that doesn't necessarily mean that to all orders you have the shift symmetry in the background. That's what you need to actually track inflation
in the house. Well, I mean, okay. But then I guess the language is a bit different then, because this Gaussian boson that they introduced, that does have shift symmetry, but right? That's not the field perturbations, but rather, well, curvature perturbations. Or maybe it's the derivative of the Gaussian boson is the field perturbation. I'm mixing my terminology. Now, something does have shift symmetry, which is a zeta variable. That does have shift symmetry, because it's conserved on superpositions.
But then that's not true when you've got entropy perturbations.
Sorry?
But that's not true when you've got entropy perturbations.
That's true. Yeah, so even that's not the case. Yeah. So
both are mightily broken, even the I think that one of the epsilon definition that comes into the denominator of the power spectrum goes into the definition of pi itself, and then the ratio of correction to pi gets additional epsilon correction. So they go to, but yeah, there is one intrinsically inside that.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe there is some other definition. But anyway, okay, so the second point you're making is that there is some sort of invariance under rotation.
What I say is that shape symmetry in the field transforms to this symmetry. If, because here it means you have a okay. And for delta chi. So I say it's not the case. If you don't know which one is adiabatic, which one is entropy, so you should use this one, these definitions, and then you get this. So, I mean, if you don't know, if you know that which one is, one of them is entropy mode, one of them is adiabatic mode, then okay, it's okay. You can do the same as Senator and Zanderian. But if you don't know, and at the end you want to say that which one is adiabatic mode, compare it, and then compare it with curvature perturbation, you need to use this transformation. So these terms are.
So it seems like somehow in that way, adiabaticity, I mean, like, single field was somehow baked in at the beginning anyway. Because if they know which field is the adiabatic mode, then it's like they're kind of assuming that they're on some kind of effectively single field trajectory anyway. Whereas you're saying, you know,
yes,
you can go away from that. And that's an important change. It seems like they somehow baked in this, like, single field.
Is it just
start.
Rotation? I mean, is it just that they...
Is it
just rotation?
Yes, it's just a rotation, yes.
No, but I think in their formalism, they basically, by doing that, they pick a slot time slicing as being the like preferred frame.
Yes,
then
exactly. What they do is that they have this 3 plus 1 formalism, okay? Then effectively, they just write all the possible terms, I think, okay, by imposing the three-dimensional general covariance, okay, all the terms. And then they reintroduce the general covariance for four dimensions by adding this Goldstone boson. Okay, so they have this the preferred Goldstone boson there. And it's, I mean, it relates to time direction, okay? Then they add these other terms, the adiabatic modes. So they assume that that Goldstone boson is adiabatic mode, and then they add the entropic modes, okay? But here, when I started from the background, I don't know which one is adiabatic, which one is entropy mode. A combination, obviously, is adiabatic mode.
So really what you're saying is you've got to impose the shape symmetry on the right combination. You can't just impose it on the raw field.
Yes, yes. So then the physically it's important because then you can get these terms without derivatives. Because they don't get these terms. All the terms in their methods have derivative terms. Because all the terms are like this.
Correct, that in that picture, you always have a preferred cosmological time that you know determines the area value. Yes, we know practically we always have that. So we just choose that to be the right way of writing our theory.
Yes, but I think when you, I mean, when you pick that direction before the perturbations, then you miss these sounds. I mean, because it's, I mean, I understand that your point, but the point is that if you pick the adiabatic mode first and then the add entropic mode, it's different if you don't know which one is adiabatic mode.
And this would be much more practical if you've got some fundamental theory and you don't. I mean, you have no idea until you actually solve the background equation conversion what the adiabatic mode is.
Yes.
So it makes much more sense if you just come from that.
Yes.
Getting back to experimental physics, Planck 2013 doesn't favor polynomial inflation. Does not favor multi-field hyperinflation. Favors the Platon model.
Yes.
So, the Platon model, as has been advertised here, PIS, you have problems getting enough inflation or any inflation. But, so indeed, you have higher derivatives of phi dot.
Yes.
And they're going to run away, they're going to really run away compared to phi dot square. Okay? So you're going to produce a lot of internal chaotic inflation. You're not going to have uniformity and so on. So, the Planck ratio data, if you believe it, I presume you have to, severely restricts this whole picture. You're restricted to single field inflation, and no Gaussian, no non-Gaussian. That's what the data say. Even then you have a problem with inflation. Maybe. There's a lot of fine-tuning going, which is what we're trying to avoid.
Yes.
So if you wanna, if I wanna translate John's question, what do your conclusions imply for experiments, if anything?
I don't know the exact one, but I should say that this one is compatible with observation because you can put theta dot zero, so you can't get non-Gaussian. But okay, you know, even now, there is some papers, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that you can get, you can have multi-field inflation, which is consistent with Planck data. Is it true? No?
Yeah, I mean, of course. You can make multi-field inflation look as much like single-field inflation as you possibly want it to.
You can
yes.
do that by ignoring the multi-field inflation experimentally. You can put it in and take it out.
But the other point is that I think for me is that assuming that you have just one field is a fine tuning for me. I mean, if you assume that you had just one field, one scalar field, it's a kind of fine tuning. You should answer this question: why just one field? If you have one field, maybe you have 10 fields.
The problem is that multi-field with a lot more parameters.
Yes.
More every cycle.
But like, in theory, you've always got loads and loads of moduli, so you've always got multi-field inflation, and in fact, you've got to know how can I make this look like what I see in Planck, and that's what this is telling you. It's saying if you have this multi-field model, you have to make theta dots and all, or you're going to have loads of non-Gaussianity. So, given the fundamental theories give you multi-field inflation, you need to know how to make predictions of those theories, I would say. And this is how, and this says, here's your multi-field model, this is how you make it give you the correct observables.
I mean, always, you know, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I think that if you say I have just one field, it means you tuned all the other ones coefficients zero. So it's a fine tuning.
Yeah, we know that. That's the problem.
Okay, so in principle, maybe we should start with multi-field and see that how we can make those coefficients smaller and smaller naturally. Okay, just.
But the data prefers one field coefficient.
Yes, exactly.
It does?
Yes, it prefers. Favors is the word.
I should favor multi-field inflation? Which piece of data prefers multi-field inflation?
No, the Planck ratio data does not favor multi-field inflation.
Sorry, it does not favor that.
That's right.
I think that's too strong a statement. It has no, it yield no evidence. It's
ambivalent to words.
It yield no smoking guns from multi-field, but it didn't. You can make multi-field look as much like single-field as you possibly want it to be.
By making them smaller, yeah.
That's
sort of a trivial statement.
I guess that's now a good time to thank you.
Thank you very much.